And every decision you make is either taking you closer to the life you want or further away. But if you don't have that idea what you're solving for, you're just making the decision on the information in front of you. Things like, who's your ideal leader? What's the kind of company you work best in? One of my favorites is really all about this idea of, is your career about company, craft, or cause? Because that really dictates where you should go and what you should do.
Hey, it's David, and you're listening to Leadership Without Losing Your Soul, your source for practical leadership inspiration, tools, and strategies you can use to achieve transformational results without sacrificing your humanity or your mind in the process.
Hey, welcome to the show today. So excited to have you with us. This is I think we only have two episodes left after this one in season 15. Cannot wait, preview, and you know it's coming, season 16, all about powerful phrases for dealing with workplace conflict. So we've got two more episodes after this one, and then we'll dive into season 16. It's going to be a lot of fun. All right, joining us today is someone who is going to help you do some pretty cool things. Find a fulfilling and satisfying career that aligns with your values, passions, company culture, and skills. Help you wake up every day motivated and excited to go to work. And for leaders, how do you build a workplace where your team's inspired to be and do their best every day? So, Andre, that is a tall order. Are you up for it? Those three things.
I'm up for it, David. Let's do it. Thanks for having me on the show.
Hey, it's my pleasure. So let me tell our audience a little bit about you. So Andre Martin is PhD, an organizational psychologist, talent management executive with 20 plus years of experience in talent development, executive team development, employee engagement, culture change, C-suite assessment, succession planning, innovation design thinking, strategy development, and employee experience design. So you get the idea. He might know what he's talking about. Worked with all kinds of cool companies you've heard of, Nike, Disney, Target, Mars, Inc., Google, and more. And he's the author of a book that we're talking about today called Wrong Fit, Right Fit, Why How We Work Matters More Than Ever. So Andre, welcome to Leadership Without Losing Your Soul.
Hey, thanks, David. Good to be here.
Absolutely. So, all right. So we're going to get into this, find a fulfilling, satisfying career, wake up every day motivated, excited to go to work, and build cultures that help people to have that same experience. Before we can do any of that, though, we need to learn a little bit more about you. And so I want to ask you if you could take us back to your earliest memory of yourself as a leader. Where does that take you?
Well, it takes me all the way back to when I was a lot younger. So I grew up in Southern Missouri in the Ozark Mountains, and I was the product of two very, very gifted, very caring parents, but they got divorced when I was in sixth grade. And so my three brothers and I were raised by our mom, who was a professor of dietetics at a small college in the Ozark Mountains. And I think in those moments early on in my life, probably from about 12 years old on, I had to pitch in and help out. You know, we had to help my mom run our lives because we were very busy, very energetic, very fast moving young adults. And I think in that, you know, in that moment, you sort of learn what leadership is from a very practical level, which is really simply asking the question, what do you need and how can I help?
What do you need and how can I help? What a great, there we go. There's a practical takeaway. We're what, 2 seconds into the show. There's a practical takeaway. What do you need and how can I help? I love it. Boy, if every leader, if we would all ask that of our teams, what amazing cultures we would build, transformation and outcomes we'd achieve, right?
That's right. And it's funny, I've been in leadership development and talent work for 25 years and the principles of great leadership are super simple. You know, if you can, those two basic questions, use those. If you can think about yourself as, hey, my job is to import stress and then export civility, like those two concepts alone, they can help you really frame your day and show up in a way that's going to allow you to get the best out of your people, which is essentially what we all want.
Love it. Import stress, export civility.
Yeah.
Import stress, export civility. I think of it, I often use the metaphor of like a lightning rod. You know, there's all that tension and high energy that comes in. And like as a lightning rod, can I take that, dissipate it into the ground, but pass on the positive energy that we need and that's going to get the results and build those relationships.
It's a great metaphor too.
All right. Well, so let's get into talking about fit. So learn a little bit about that leadership journey you were on from an early age. What do you need and how can I help? All the way up to now we're talking about fit. And so right fit, wrong fit, and we'll get into all of that. But as I understand, I want to see if I've captured the essence of what we're talking about here correctly, is that the goal is twofold when we're talking about fit. First, like as an employee, as a member of an organization, I want to be someplace that's good for me and good for them. And then as a leader, the second kind of the other side of things is I want to pay attention to the fit and culture that I'm building so that I have a motivated, energized team. Are these the dimensions, or is there anything else that we need to be thinking about?
Well, I think those are, it's a great description of the two groups that I really wanted to serve with the book, right? I wanted to serve employees trying to walk into work and do the best work of their lives. And I wanted to serve leaders who are trying to build great companies. I think the essence of the book, though, is a really interesting space that I found myself as I started doing early research. It's like we tend to talk about culture as this big sort of, you know, sort of amorphous, ethereal sort of concept. And we tend to talk about it through purpose and values. And what I was finding in my early research is, hey, there's something else there. Culture is really about the way the company works day to day. It's how we solve problems, how we collaborate, how we manage conflict, how we give feedback, develop people, how we convene, what's our relationship with time, right? All those things that make up work on a random, you know, Thursday morning in February. And so I started to say, hey, maybe the question isn't whether or not there's good or bad cultures, whether or not there's toxic or engaging environment. Yes, there's leaders who are toxic. Yes, there's teams that are dysfunctional. But at a very base level, there's a certain way that a company likes to do work. And if the way the company does work fits for you, man, it's like riding with your dominant hand every day. It's easy, it's fast, it's quick. You are just practicing your craft. But when it's not a good fit, and this is the metaphor we use in the book, it feels like you're riding with your non-dominant hand. It's hard, your quality's not good, your confidence goes down. No matter how much you try, how much effort you put in, you're never going to be as good as if you were in your natural environment. And so really try to boil down this idea to say, hey, if we focus more on how a company works, how Google's different than Target, different than Nike, different than Mars, and we could find talent that fits that, we're just going to see benefits all the way around.
So if we've got those two groups and we're looking at culture and fit through all those elements of all those different ways of thinking about the way we do work together, let's start with the talent, with the employee. For our listeners who are thinking about maybe a career move, or maybe they're actively looking right now, or they're thinking about their next opportunity, whatever that might be, where do we begin to start to get a sense of what that right fit would look like for us?
Yeah, David, the cool thing about the book that I enjoyed the most was I did about 110 interviews with CEOs down to first-time talent, and just hearing their stories of when they had right fit, what was true, and also hearing their wrong fit stories of when they didn't get it right, what happened and what lessons of experience did they learn? And almost universally across the people that found themselves in right fit experience, we've all had them. So if you're in a wrong fit, any listener out there, it's okay. We've all been there. Right? What the talent told me, the interviews told me, when I asked them, what would you do? Or what do you wish you would have done? They said, I wish I would have done a ton more reflection, really deep self-reflection before I ever went out and looked at a job advertisement. And they said that for two reasons. One is they weren't really sure what they were solving for.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then the minute they opened up a job ad, it was a giant marketing machine. Right? It's a better title. It's a better pay. Look how great we are. Check out our career site. You know, it's like you're in this giant first date environment. And so I think that idea of like the first step for any talent is just simply to stop, do some really deep reflection, get super clear about what you're solving for, both in the near term and in the long term. And then look at your current environment first. Like, do you actually have those things and maybe you just have taken them for granted? Are you mistaking sort of comfort for boredom and a lack of momentum? And then if that's still not true, that's still not your place, then go out and start the search.
So as you were interviewing those folks and they were thinking about the reflection that they would ask of themselves if they could go back and, gosh, if I could do that again, what were some of the specific areas of reflection that we can be thinking about as we're doing that?
Yeah. Well, they're in the book. So one of the parts of the book that I think is probably the most powerful is all these excursions. So we put in about eight excursions, really from those interviews, places where people said, "I wish I would have thought harder about this." You know, I'll just name a couple of them. We can go through some if you want, but one of them was, what do I actually value in big decisions? Right? There's a difference between what we wish we valued or what we tell people we value versus what we actually value in big decisions. You know, second one was this idea of, what's the life I'm trying to build? You know, where do I see myself 10, 15, 20 years from today? Because if you know that, you can sort of take, you know, a long-term vision is nothing more than a series of short-term decisions that you make. And every decision you make is either taking you closer to the life you want or further away. But if you don't have that idea what you're solving for, you're just making the decision on the information in front of you. Things like, who's your ideal leader? What's the kind of company you work best in? One of my favorites is really all about this idea of, is your career about company, craft, or cause? Because that really dictates where you should go and what you should do. So there's eight exercises in the book, and they're super detailed. They allow you to go all the way through. It's really just a workbook to say, hey, by the end of those eight exercises, I will guarantee you're going to be able to look at a job ad in about 15 seconds, know whether or not that's even in the mix for you.
Yeah, so many different dimensions to look at, and you give us the tools to dive in and get there. So let's take that then. So I've done this work. I have reflected, gone through the eight excursions, worked through, figured out the three that you had there, craft or the other two.
Company and cause.
Craft, company, and cause. Let's just walk through those for just a second, just so
Yeah.
we can have the practical to hang on to as we're continuing our journey.
Yeah, it was one of my favorite insights. So, you know, one of the things that really stands out is we often make decisions about our career sort of as binary decisions. I'm in this job, do I want that job? I'm in this job, or I have this experience, do I want that experience? And it's actually bigger than that. So there's three types of careers, at least that I've uncovered so far. The first one is a career that's of company. And David, you know these people. Like, these are the people that literally are so tied to the brand that they work at, to the company they're a part of, to the place that they go in every day, that they couldn't imagine themselves being anywhere else. Right? I mean, at Nike, at Target, at Mars, these sort of iconic companies, you see a lot of people who are just, we call, you know, at Mars, we call them Martians. Right? They're gonna just be there for life because it's everything to them. And I think when you're building a career that's around company, it's really important to know that your biggest asset is going to be two things: how big is your network, and how many parts of the company have you had practical experience in? And so you can't build a career in company and stay in one vertical the whole time. You can't sit in one team. So the more places you can work, the better you are. So it's really a career of lateral moves that are going to allow you to have a 20, 30, 40-year career at one of those places. Really different than if you're building a career that's around craft, right? A career around craft is basically saying there's this really narrowed space, and I want to become a deep expert and maybe one of the best in class in it.
A
And so I, you
virtuoso.
know, yeah, exactly. So for many years, I was of craft. I was trying to be the best executive development talent practitioner in the world. Well, when you're building that kind of career, here's the deal, is it's almost impossible to do that in one company, right? Because the only way you can have depth in a craft is you have to see that craft in a number of different systems. And so I always tell people, I'm like, hey, if you really want to be great in this craft, you really want to be great in this thing, you probably are going to have to get ready to move companies because you'll be of more value the more places you can see this craft practiced. And then the last career is of cause. And these are the people, again, you know them when you see them, is they are out every day in the world trying to solve a giant problem or cure a big injustice, right? They want to solve this issue. And so when you're building a career around cause, you have to follow the energy. You have to go where people are really working on the edge of this thing. And so, you know, an example I always think about is there's a lot of erosion in the beaches in California where I'm getting ready to move, right? Well, if you care about that cause and you're sitting in the Ozark Mountains in Missouri, it's really hard for you to be a part of it, right? So you have to sort of go to where the energy is, go to where the problem is, and really then work on that problem from the inside out.
Those distinctions are so helpful. I think as I'm thinking about various stages in my career or other folks who I know who are facing those, you know, and that's just one dimension, but to think about those three, right? So we've got the craft that you're trying to hone or the company that you're trying to expand or the cause, and the way that you pursue your career differs and varies depending on which of those is your chief motivation. I imagine, can you have like, this is my dominant, and I have a little taste of this too. You have, see any of that?
You can. And you know what? There's a few people in the world that hit the trifecta, right? They're getting to practice their craft in a company they love. And the moment that they're in is actually allowing them to solve the big problem that they're out to solve. It's just really rare. And so what I tell people is it can actually change. Your orientation can change, right? But at any moment, something's primary. And the more you can separate which one of those things is primary, the better able you are to see the next opportunity you might want to pursue.
All right. So our guest today is Andre Martin. The book is Wrong Fit, Right Fit, Why How We Work Matters More Than Ever. And we've been talking about the reflection that you do at the start of this process to pursue a position, a role in an organization that's going to be the right fit for you. And so specifically, we're just talking about what's the type of career that you're interested in. That is one of several different dimensions. So Andre, you said that if we go through those eight dimensions, what did you call them? The eight
excursions.
Thank you. In the book, that we will have a robust, really good picture of ourselves, and that we can take that and we can look at a job posting.
Yeah.
And you said in 15 seconds, have a good sense of whether this is worth continuing looking any farther or not. So I am curious, when we are looking at those, or when we're doing, and in the book, you talk about not just, you know, stopping with just a quick glance, but do your research, right? Really do your homework. What should we be looking for? How are we looking as we pursue those next roles?
Yeah, I think the first thing I'd say, David, is, hey, for many people out there right now, jobs are scarce. They're hard to come by, and we're in a really interesting environment. And so one of the reasons I was compelled to write this book, it's like, hey, just don't jump too soon. But if you are on the search, and you do have the opportunity to choose between positions, which you should have a lot of gratitude for, you got to be ready to face it in the right way, you know, with sort of all the rose-colored glasses off. And here's kind of what I mean by it is interview processes are, they're like first dates, right? If you think about it, I, as someone who's interviewing for a job, come to that job with a really polished resume, with really well-honed answers. I'm probably dressed to the T's in my best outfit, right? And companies are coming in the same way. They're sort of presenting the most aspirational version of themselves. And so I think what I'd say is, hey, when you start looking for jobs, two things are really important. One is, don't get caught by the shiny, happy, you know, things like bigger titles, a lot more pay, because those have a really tenuous relationship to long-term job satisfaction. The number of interviewers I had that they're like, I'm like, why did you go? You were in a place that you liked. You had a great job. You were performing at a high level. And they said, you know what happened to me is I got caught in the machine. And it was really nice to have someone say, we want you.
Mm.
And I got attracted by things that really didn't matter to me in the end. So that's the first piece of advice is, hey, you got to be really clear that you're in a first date. And so you got to dig really deep. And so in the book, we talk about strategies for you to really triangulate information and hear the full picture. Because the other thing that happens to people is confirmation bias takes over, right? Let's say, David, you work at this great company that I love, and I'm interviewing for this job. You may well tell me things that, if I was on my game, I'd say, that's not the kind of place I want to be, right? But because I'm motivated, this decision, maybe I really like you, or maybe I really like the brand. Confirmation bias happens where we only pay attention to the information that confirms the decision I want to make. And so again, in these interviews, you know, I ask people, hey, if you're in a wrong fit experience, like, when did you know? And they would pause. You know what they said to me? They said, I knew it in the interview. I just ignored that information and went ahead because these other things look bright and shiny and interesting and exciting.
So you talked about triangulation there, Andre. So Can you give us just an example of, as we look at the posting, as we have the interview, as we're doing other things, let's take that one level deeper. What are we trying? What are we looking for? How do you get a sense of the match in some of those dimensions that we discovered through the excursions?
Yeah, you're really looking for a couple of things. I think first and foremost, you need to look at, does the company work the way I want to work? You know, so all those things I mentioned at the top of the interview, David, you know, how do they collaborate? How do they solve problems? How do they kick off team meetings? How do they give feedback, develop their people? One of the most important ones is how they socialize ideas. These are the things that are going to make up your day. And so really being able to dig into those and understand the reality of them is super important. The second thing's important is, what's the capability they're looking for, right? And do I have it or do I want to build it? You know, because that's the other thing. The job descriptions are, you know, this sort of plethora of all these bullet points about everything that's included in every single job. But the truth is, a very small amount of capability is what they're really looking for. So you got to ask yourself, like, find out what they're looking for, and then ask yourself, is that what I want to be doing? Is that skill that I have? Can I be great in that area? And then the last one is, what's the actual duties of the job, right? Because again, job descriptions mostly are pulled off the internet, unfortunately.
ChatGPT writes them.
ChatGPT writes them. And the truth of it is, hey, out of those 40 bullet points on that job description, the job you're going to fall into is probably three of them. And there's probably 20 other bullets of things you're going to have to do that nobody has talked to you about. And so really get into, hey, what is the actual, like, next 9 to 18 months of this job? What are the three projects that are really going to matter? And then the other thing I'd say that's really important is the interview, no matter how good of an interviewer you are, no matter how much of an investigative journalist you can be, you're just not going to get the whole truth. I was reading a piece of research the other day from Resume Builder, I think, that said 40% of managers admitted to lying during job interviews, either about the job description, about the pay, or about the overall offer. And I'm like, okay, so right there. And they're not doing it maliciously. You know, they're white lies. They're lies of aspiration.
I'm desperate to fill this position, so anything I can do to make it easier to fill.
So I tell people, I'm like, hey, the thing that I think is one of the best strategies in the world is go out to LinkedIn, find someone who was at that company for 3 to 5 years. They had a really good understanding of it, but they've recently left, and interview them. You know, don't look for the dirt. You're not looking for skeletons closet, but you are looking for an honest assessment of how it's going to feel to work there day to day.
That little extra effort. I mean, if you have two or three of those conversations, even one is good, but if you can have two or three of them, you'll get so much more perspective. And, you know, even as you're talking about that, Andre, I'm thinking as a interviewer on the hiring side of things, I can't, at this point, I couldn't tell you how many people I've interviewed in the decades of my career, but I can consistently say, I can count on one hand the number of candidates who asked really good questions.
Yeah, that's right.
That I felt were super helpful for them in determining fit, that made me think, so, you know what? That's a really good question. Let me think about that. And how does that? And I see where you're going with it. You know, that it's a skill that distinguishes, it sets you apart to begin with, if that's matches the company, but also is going to help you obviously get that information.
Hey, David, it's a really important one, right? You know, the interviews go often like this is, you know, the interviewer will say at the start, hey, you know, I really want to ask a few questions, but I want to leave you some time at the end to ask some things about me and the company as well. But what happens is 55 minutes of that hour long interview is them asking you questions. And then you get this one little moment. Mm-hmm. And many people's sort of intuition is, I'd better ask a layup. Like, what do you love about the company? What makes it a great place to be? All those kinds of things. And the truth is, like, that's your moment to do two things. Is one, to prove that you are a deep thinker. Second one is to get below the surface. And so I like questions like, hey, tell me something that happens at this company that doesn't happen anywhere else that you've worked. I like the idea of, tell me about the success profile of the employee that succeeds there. Another one is, think about an employee that's joined in the last 90 days and they feel like they've been there for 10 years. What did they do that was different than other people who were coming in the company? Those are some things that'll just, they're just going to be filled with really great knowledge about the company and what it's going to take to be a success.
Love those. Some fantastic practical questions you can ask. So you've got several takeaways here, and we are not done. We're talking with Andre Martin. The book is Wrong Fit, Right Fit: Why How We Work Matters More Than Ever. And, you know, we've been talking about how you do your research, how you ask questions, how you can talk to people to find out everything you can to determine whether you've got a good, potentially good match or not. And you said something earlier, Andre, that I think is really important to note, and we want to recognize that we are kind of talking from the perspective of somebody who, hey, like, I am not starving. I've got a job. I'm, and maybe there's even potentially a lot of things I like about it, but I'm looking at that next thing. And that's a very strong foundation to be looking from. And it's also not reality for many people who might be finding themselves, I really need new income now. I really need health insurance now. And are in some of those kinds of situations. And I'm curious how you advise or recommend, or we think practically about pursuing the needs that people have while also setting themselves up for the best success they can have in those situations. Not ideal, but that's also reality for many folks.
Yeah, I think there's a couple things I'd say, David. The first one is, you know, one of the excursions we put in the book was around this idea of what are you solving for right now? Because sometimes, frankly, a job just needs to be a job. I've got two kids in college. I have to work. You know, I have to pay bills. And so that helps people get centered to say, hey, part of maybe why the job search is taking longer because we're being too picky. And maybe all we need right now is just a job. And then we can start thinking more broadly about the next step after that. So that's a really important place to be, is like, really, what are you solving for right now? Why does this matter? And I think the second one is in the book, we have a couple chapters that are about buffers. So they're basically things that would say, hey, maybe you're not in a job that you love. Man, you would love to go, but you just can't find something. It's really about how do you help yourself have a little bit better experience, so those days are inherently easier than they were yesterday. Yeah. You know, I mean, we're looking at data that's like what Gallup says, $8.8 trillion of lost productivity in the workplace due to disengagement. You know, and that alone tells me that a lot of people are struggling. And the more you struggle, the more your confidence falls. The more your confidence falls, the more you start to doubt yourself. The more you start to doubt yourself, the more stressed you become. And then, you know, your life just becomes really hard. And you start losing the things that really matter to you, your relationships, your hobbies, some of those things start to go away. So these buffers, and there's two types. There's inspirational buffers. So connection to purpose, more connection to meaningful work, the ability to find a consumer in need and focus on them. Having a really good relationship with time, frankly, is a really big one. And on the other side, there's relationship buffers. Things like having a supportive leader, finding a mentor, having workplace best friends. Frankly, one of the biggest things my folks talk to me that save them when they are in wrong or hard fit experiences. And then one of my favorites was finding your workplace doppelganger. Right. So doppelganger is someone in the world that looks like you physically. Right. In this case, it's actually someone who maybe has the same experiences as you, maybe has the same knowledge, maybe is in a similar job that you are, but they're different on one variable. They're succeeding and you feel like you're slogging in mud. And what that does, David, is it gives you a chance to say, hey, maybe this isn't the company. Maybe I'm just not in the right place inside of it. Because that person who's like me is able to succeed, that should tell you that you could too. And it might mean that instead of jumping ship and going to another company, maybe just look for another role inside the place that you are.
Is there, with that doppelganger strategy buffer, is there ever, maybe it's fit, is there ever, oh gosh, they have all these things, but they have maybe a different skill or a different capacity that I could invest in or decide I don't want to, but either way, is that part of that process?
100%, you know, because they're succeeding. You got to look at, hey, where are we the same and maybe where are we different? And in that difference, you might find some places that, yeah, you could develop and find your way to success and happiness inside the place you are.
Yeah, I love that. Well, and I'm so glad you took us to buffers. That's exactly where I was going to go next. And so, so talking about the doppelganger buffer strategy, the relationship buffer strategy, you mentioned relationship with time. Let's dive deeper into that for a moment.
Yeah. So one of the things that tends to happen when we're in wrong fit experiences is we tend to believe that we need to work harder. We need to put in more time. You know, we and organizations actually teach us this, right? Because of performance reviews and, you know, ratings that are 3 out of 5, they kind of tell us you're not good enough. And we take that to mean you're not working hard enough. Mm. And in the conversations I had with talent, you know, these wrong fit conversations were cathartic. And they were super sad, man. I mean, really successful people in the world who are holding on to this place in their life when they felt like they weren't good enough. And what they said is, hey, my mentality was if I just work a little bit harder, I'll find my way. And what they found is that the harder they worked, the more time they spent at work, the more the things that actually restored their energy fell away. They lost relationships. They lost hobbies. They stopped, you know, sort of doing the things that renewed their energy. And in the end, that just created this vicious cycle that sent them to a place and many times, you know, fully exhausted, if not depressed and a little hopeless. And so I think being able to say, hey, you know, the idea of a relationship with time is that, you know, you shouldn't sacrifice the other things outside of your life in order to try to find your way to high performance, right? High performance needs to exist inside the boundaries of time. And if you set those boundaries, then you can, you know, sort of focus your energy on working harder. You know, the other thing I'd say, and this is a really big, and it's been an insight over the conversations for me, is that I want talent to understand that, hey, creative energy is always flowing. We're never blocked. It's always flowing, right? You're always using your creative energy in some capacity. When you're in wrong fit experiences, though, your creative energy is going to things like managing negative emotions, creating coping mechanisms to dive down your stress, creating narratives about your world that allow you to believe it's going to be okay. And so that's why we tend to lose our relationship with time, because our creative energy is going to these things and managing these negative sort of feelings and emotions, and less of it's going to our craft. So we're having to sort of spend more time in order to make up that difference.
That is such a valuable and important, almost mantra concept to hang on to, that success can, should, needs to, will occur within, our high performance will occur within some bound of time, whatever that appropriate amount is for the individual. And that the story, that that tape that we have that says, oh no, it's if I can just intrude into all these others, then it will have, it's not true, and it's never going to serve.
No, it's never going to serve. And frankly, it gets into a place that's just unsustainable. You know, I started my career doing a lot of sports psychology. And one of the things that I love working with athletes around is they understand this idea of you have to recover to perform, and you have to have such a great process. Like, you win championships in the process, right? But in corporate America, we kind of don't understand that concept yet, right? If you created this really sort of hard set routine and process for yourself inside of boundaries, and you optimize that process, success is almost automatic. Right. But instead, what we try to do is we break away from all those things. We extend those boundaries. We work from 5 o'clock in the morning till 10 o'clock at night. We put in way too much effort. In the end, we just, you know, energy's finite. And if you right. don't recover it, it's just not going to be there when you need it.
It's just how we are. It's how things work.
it's just how things work. And then the last thing for talent, like I'd say on this idea of buffers, and it really gets back to, when should you go? You've tried to buffer it. It hasn't worked. It's still hard. When you should go. And I think one of the things I'd say to talent is, I don't know. I think that's pretty individual. You know, when it's too hard and you put in too much effort. What I would say to you is this, is don't ever forget that there is a untalked about an underlying cost to every transition. Back to that, you know, creative energy sort of standpoint, is when you transition, all of your creative energy goes to the transition, right? Because think about it, you move companies, you know what you're doing? You're setting your relationships back to zero. Mm-hmm. You're setting your reputation back to zero. You're having to learn a whole new language for how to work and how to get things done, new processes, new systems, new platforms, new principles. I was just talking to someone yesterday, matter of fact, that said, you know what, I'm 12 months in this role as CEO of this startup, and I finally feel like I'm doing good work. And I'm like, yeah, that's because all your creative energy was going to transition. And so, you know, it's been pretty popular to talk about job hopping, jump from job to job, job. And I'm like, my philosophy on it is you can do that, but just know that your craft is going to be job hopping. You're going to become really good at it.
Really good at that process as opposed to the thing itself. Yeah. And I see that too on the employer side too, right? From a leadership perspective, is to have that in mind that it's going to take time for people to truly soak up, understand, and transition into understanding how what you're doing works, how you serve your client, customer services you provide at a real gut level to where I'm able to make that full impact. And that can take 6, 10, 12 months, depending on the kind of work and organization.
Yeah, I think, David, if we get the employer just for a minute, you know, one of the big disservices we do to our talent that comes in our companies is we don't teach them the secret decoder ring of success. You know, how many times have we heard, and we probably both said it as leaders, where you're like, hey, working here is really different. But you just got to kind of bump into it. You got to figure it out over time. And it's like, I'm sorry, like, you know, the way we work, it's evident.
Yep.
You know, and every company is different, but you can teach it. And
yes,
I'm like,
you can.
Like, why do we believe we have to rush through onboarding? Why wouldn't we take a month, set people down, say, we're going to teach you the system of success here. We're going to teach you everything you need to know. So the minute you take that first seat, you're not having to bump into the culture, because you know what? Every time I bump into the culture, you know what happens to me? Is invariably I bump into it by getting it wrong.
Of course.
Every time I get it wrong, it chips away at my engagement, chips away at my engagement, chips away at my engagement. So I finally get to a point, I'm like, I'm just tired of trying to figure out how to do work here so I can do the thing that I love.
You're reminding me of some interactions I had. Definitely have seen that dynamic. I remember a chief operating officer role I was in, and really insisted on doing what you're talking about, building out the onboarding process, and the aspects of culture and how we did in this particular industry were so different than any other organization that we're going to give it a 6 to 8 week process. And I remember some of the longer term folks around saying, hey, nobody did that for me, sink or swim, you know, you jump. I'm like, was that good? Why would you do that to someone? Don't you want them to succeed as quickly as possible and stay and engage and know? I love how you're saying, like, let's give people the decoder ring. Why keep that a secret?
Yeah. And also, you know, and we can take that all the way up, David, to interviewing. You know, I'm always marvel at this idea that, like, why don't we tell people exactly what it's like to work here?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you think about like a realistic job preview, I wish every sort of job ad did this. It said, hey, here's the 97 ways we get work done. Is this your brand of crazy? Because if so, you're going to love it here. Right. And if that was the first cutoff, we're actually asking the question, do you work the way we like to work? And then if you do, hey, here's the capabilities we need. We need a great podcast host. We need a great organizational psychologist. Do you have those capabilities? If so, great. And then all you say to them is, hey, here's the next three projects we need you to do. Are these in your wheelhouse and do you like doing them?
Mm-hmm.
If so, come and work here. You're going to have a blast. But, you know, we don't do that. We present this aspirational version of things. And then when people get there on the first day, they realize that a certain percentage of that stuff was aspiration or just flatly made up. And right there, we lose these people that were so excited to be at this company. And the thing that I'm always like, I marvel at, is I'm like, why do we do that? Because if we hire them, they're going to find out anyway. And then when they find out once they've signed up and it doesn't meet the expectations that they thought they had, dude, you just set back their, you know, their career and their engagement by, you know, a few months. You're basically just playing recovery the whole time.
And theirs and yours, that nobody wins. And yet, like you said, why do we do it? Well, I mean, I think we can surmise a few answers to that question, right? We're desperate for people. I need a bot. I warm bot. You know? And we don't want to run people off. Oh gosh, if I tell them that, no one's going to want to do it. As opposed to, I love the way you're saying it. Like, this is what it's actually like here. Is this your brand? Is this the way you like to be? And it's not every person is right for every team. Not every team is right for every person. But to have that up front, then, yeah, we create an opportunity for alignment there. And the again, that tape that plays in our head saying, well, gosh, I'm going to drive people away. No, you're that much faster. If you know that's not the right person, you're coming that much closer to finding the right person or a good fit.
Yeah,
Why
that's right.
wouldn't you do that?
And the thing is, I mean, this is the thing that I sort of look at when I think about all the companies I've been in, is they all are inherently different. And there's actually plenty of talent for everybody, right? And when you get someone in a right fit experience, when you have someone who said, hey, this is how we like to work. If you like this, come here. And they get there and it is how they work, they're just on an upward trajectory from day one,
Like a beginning, yeah.
right? And I remember, I was talking to one of the interviewees, and I love this story, is, as a creative marketing person, and they love to play with boundaries, right? They love to create all their own stuff. And this person went to a company that basically had super refined standard operating procedures, right? They had a template for everything. And when this person first got here, they were like, oh my God, I'm not going to get to create the deck. But over time, one of the things that they said is, you know what? By having those clear ways of working, principles, practices, and platforms, she said it was my opportunity to practice my craft in the purest way. Because instead of having to worry about context around me and trying to be great there, I just got to do what I do really well. And they got to see me and my best thinking every single day. And she's like, I loved it and have not found it since.
Such a great example. There are so many more of these that we could tease out, but we are running out of time. So, Andre Martin is our guest. The name of the book is Wrong Fit, Right Fit: Why How We Work Matters More Than Ever. Andre, where should listeners go to learn more, connect with you, start taking this journey and the reflection, as well as building the cultures for themselves?
Yeah, I'd say first you can check out the book at all the major retailers, Barnes and Noble, Amazon. Pick it up. It's a, it really is a practical read meant to really help people find fit. I think secondly is my website's www.wrongfitrightfit.com. And so you can check out resources there. You can find me, you can see some of the things I'm up to. And then last but not least, I have a newsletter that's relaunching in middle of February, and it's really meant to have practical tips to make this week just a little bit better. And it's called mondaymatters.substack.com. So sign up for that and you'll get a little inspiration dose on Monday mornings that'll help you get through the week.
Excellent. Fantastic. Couple different resources for you to take advantage of. So listeners, I hope you'll take advantage of Wrong Fit, Right Fit and do the work. It is super practical, as Andre has told us. And you really, whether even if you're not looking right now, I think it's such a powerful journey to go on to really look at that. And for your current role and what you're doing, and there might even be some ways to it will enhance that. So we have been talking in the last few minutes, Andre, about leaders and how we're interviewing, how we're recruiting, how we're hiring, what stories we're telling, and the culture we're building to create that same kind of fit. So if we started for talent, like helping people find a fulfilling and satisfying career, wake up energized and engaged every day going to work, from a leadership perspective, as we're doing these, we talked about a few things. What's one last first step, maybe, that as we have leaders listening, they say, you know what, I want to invest in fit. I want to build that culture. Where do you suggest they start as we wrap up our conversation today?
Yeah, I would have them start here. I think we're with all the disruption and stress and complexity we've been surrounded with the last couple of years, is I think you got to start by re-recruiting the people who are already at your company. We've lost them. Everyone has their head up, they're disconnected, they're not sort of as maybe committed as we need them to be. And so I tell leaders, hey, think about four basic questions. Why is the world better with us in it? How do we make money and have impact? How does work get done here when we're at our best? And what's our unwavering promise to our talent in return for their effort? Get really clear on those answers, those questions, and literally in every moment, start re-recruiting your people back to this company by those four questions. And I think you'll see a pretty big turn in productivity and also commitment and hopefully fit in the end.
Oh, I love it. What a powerful set of four questions. Andre, can I ask you to give us those four one more time? And I'm going to actually give you the last word. So I'm going to sign off now and say, listeners, let's start asking these four questions to be the leader you'd want your boss to be. Andre Martin, one more time, those four questions.
First one is, why is the world better with us in it? How do we make money or have impact? How do we do work when we're at our best? And lastly, what's our unwavering promise to our employees for all the effort they put forth?
Until next time, Andre, thank you for being a guest with us today.
Thanks, David. I really enjoyed it.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.